The Invisible Wounds of War, Stopping Veteran Suicides. Good Monday morning. We're live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect, and I'm Melissa Ross. Thanks for listening. Just ahead, a conversation with Jacksonville City Councilman Rory Diamond. We're talking about veteran suicide prevention and more. Give us a call right now and join us. It's 549-2937. Then later, a recap of the Jags' home opener and the loss of Nick Foles for the season. That's coming up too. But first this hour, September is Suicide Prevention and Awareness Month. And veteran suicides have skyrocketed in this country. Here in our area, there's a range of initiatives to try to reach out and support this group. Rory Diamond serves on the Jacksonville City Council, and he's also the CEO of Canines for Warriors, the largest provider of service dogs for disabled American veterans. He joins us now in studio. Councilman Diamond, good morning.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being with us. And lots to talk about with Rory Diamond on the show today. Give us a call. It's 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax, and our Facebook page is open. Okay, September is Suicide Prevention and Awareness Month. Let's begin there. You are on the city council, but you've also become known around town as CEO of Canines for Warriors. How does that organization work to address this issue?
Yeah, so what we do is we rescue dogs all around the country that are in high kill shelters. We bring them to our campuses here in Florida, our biggest one being down in Nocatee. We train them to be really great service dogs for disabled veterans who are struggling with PTSD, traumatic brain injuries. And so then we pair them up, teach them how to use their dog, and send them back out into the world. And probably most importantly, we build a family of support around them. There's literally nothing a veteran can't call us with and talk to us about that we're not going to work with them on.
Having a dog is an incredible therapy for for these veterans, for everyone, but, but for veterans especially.
Yeah, four-legged miracles is what I call them. You could not have perfectly designed anything better than a dog for somebody who needs some help like this.
Okay, so rates are spiraling among our veteran population. And in 2018, there were, I think, a record number of veteran suicides.
That's right.
You've talked about this before. It's multiple deployments, isn't it, that it's driving so much of this?
Yeah, there's a lot going on. So 20 veteran suicides at least every single day in America, which is a national crisis. It's embarrassment, and it has to be addressed. Multiple deployments is one issue, spiraling PTSD, and frankly, not enough support for veterans of the type that can actually bring someone back from the brink.
Mm-hmm. And so one piece of legislation that I know you worked on is called the PAWS Act, P-A-W-S. This would fund service dogs for veterans who need them. That has not been, that's faced a tough road to federal passage, but you've been working on that, haven't you?
Yeah, we've been trying for 3 years. We started with first with Congress, then Congressman DeSantis, now Congressman Rutherford has reintroduced it, and it has been a very tough road. And we go to the VA and we say, listen, we can show you peer-reviewed hard science that these dogs are saving lives. And their response has been, we'll wait. Wait longer. Mm-hmm. But we are not going to stop. We're going to introduce this in the Senate later this month. Senator Deb Fischer is going to introduce it. Rick Scott supports it. And we're going to keep fighting for the PAWS Act because this policy has to change. These dogs are saving lives and we need to keep doing it.
It's 549-2937 as we speak with Jacksonville City Councilman Rory Diamond. Okay, what about the role of the VA? What are your thoughts about that?
So I have mixed feelings, right? There are angels throughout the VA who are doing incredible work. But I think it is almost impossible to have a $90 billion agency run out of Washington, D.C. that's going to have a really strong effect on veteran suicide down here on the ground in Jacksonville. I've met with the people who run all the veteran suicide prevention efforts up in D.C., and they're smart. They're interesting people. They care about this stuff. But stopping a suicide is a personal thing. It's a one-on-one. It's building trust and love between two people. And I don't think you can do that through a policy in Washington, D.C.
You know, I went to a memorial service yesterday in Springfield honoring the life of someone who died by suicide, and it was standing room only. This man was not a military, but his dad was, and his father got up and spoke and talked about the sacrifice people in the military make and how it impacts family life, and it was absolutely heartbreaking. And, you know, the stigma around depression and mental illness is still so strong in this country that you could run into a person and they seem fine. They seem happy, full of life, and you have no idea how that person is suffering. And often they are afraid or feel embarrassed to reach out and ask for help. And so how do we reduce the stigma around this so that people do not feel as though they're so alone, that there's no hope?
Yeah. Well, you and I are doing it right now. We're talking about it. We're putting it out on the table. I mean, suicidal thoughts, depression, this affects every single family. It really hits military families hard. But if we just keep talking about it, getting it out there and making it okay to raise your hand and say, I've got a problem. I mean, we just lost Officer Andy Lavender out at the beaches. He was beloved by everybody. Biggest personality I've met my entire life. And you never would have guessed that he had demons that were chasing him. So for someone like Andy, we just have to make it okay to open the door and say, let's talk about this. And that's what we do with our warriors at Canines for Warriors. Let's talk about it. Anytime it happens, you feel the demons, raise your hand, let's chat.
For men especially, you want to reach out to, I think for a lot of guys, they feel as though they can't show vulnerability.
Yeah, it feels like a weakness. And what I always tell our warriors, they're like, look, it's just chemicals in your brain that aren't working right. That's it. I mean, and that could happen with a bad stomach. It could also happen with a brain that's not working very well today.
And if you're just tuning in, as we talk with Jacksonville City Councilman Rory Diamond, we'll go to your calls in a moment at 549-2937. Okay. You previously served in Neptune Beach on that body, then got elected to the city council. Now you're really in the thick of things.
Yeah, we're rocking and rolling.
Let's talk about the recent issue over the half-cent sales tax referendum for Duval County Public Schools. At a contentious meeting the other day, that the council was cleared entirely as your fellow members voted on deferring the matter or tabling the matter. What's your response to those who are angry about that and also feel that the city council is improperly weighing in on this matter, that they should let the school board handle this?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of frustration like all around. Everybody understands there's a problem that we need to fix. We need to fix the schools. We've got crumbling schools, schools with problems that need to address their deferred maintenance. Everybody agrees with that. My frustration personally is that I think there's common ground between the school board and the city council, but getting 19 people who can't talk to each other and 7 people who can't talk to each other due to Florida Sunshine Laws to come up with an agreement to just get this thing done has been a very difficult task. And I think it will happen. It's going to get done. It's disappointing it's taken this long. I think everybody's very frustrated by this process. Everybody seems to have common agreement that we need to do something. We just haven't been able to get there yet, but it's going to happen.
What is your position on the push to privatize JEA? That's the other big controversy happening locally right now.
Is there anything else you want to talk about? That's tough. Please.
I got to hit you on all the big ticket items.
Dates?
I'm going to get you on all the big items before we go to callers. If that comes before you, how would you vote on that?
Well, I'll take a look at anything that comes before us. You know, my default position is always going to be like, let's stay where we are. But if there's a good reason, if there's billions and billions of dollars, that could motivate us. And we're a smaller city that needs revenue. So I'm going to look at whatever we've got, but I'll have a very sharp eye on this one. It's important that we evaluate things with 10, 20, 30 years of perspective and not just decide what's right at that moment.
Okay, let's go to some calls now for Rory Diamond, 549-2937. Nancy is in Atlantic Beach. Go ahead, Nancy.
Hi, I just, along the lines of your earlier comment, was wondering what Mr. Diamond's motivation was in putting forward the motion to table the half-cent sales tax. I know the people I talk to in my neighborhood are very much bewildered by the aggressiveness with which the council has pushed against this seemingly very straightforward request. And I just wondered if he seems, you know, sincere that he wants to move things forward. Why in the world then would you vote to or propose to table that?
Thanks for the call, Nancy.
Yeah, that's a good question, Ms. Nancy. So the first issue is we withdrew it and didn't defeat it. It was withdrawn so it could be brought back. I made the motion to withdraw because I knew I strongly suspected there weren't the votes to get it through. We had to get more than 13 votes. Otherwise, the mayor would have vetoed it. And that would mean we were tabled until 2024. Right. So any chance of getting it done soon had to be withdrawal. That's why I made that motion. I think the frustration from the council, I can't speak for my fellow city council members, was just the lack of information. So we're talking about billions and billions of dollars. They wanted some really basic questions answered, like which schools and when. And as a representative of the beaches, I think I had a right to know when, for example, Fletcher High School might get money to remove its portables, and just really simple stuff. With something that big, some basic questions really needed to be answered. In addition to that, there was certainly some seemingly bad faith information coming out of the school board. And I don't want to cast aspersions, but it was really hard to build trust during this process.
What was bad faith on the part of the school board in your view?
Yeah, in my view, so we were told there are no timetables. There was no list of what school is going to get what and when. And literally just minutes before we had our vote, we got the timetables that we were told never existed. And we had to do a public records request to get it. It was very weird. So it just, I mean, I want to get this done. Let's put all that garbage aside. Let's just put these schools first. But we just need to have some really, you know, frank conversations with the school board so we can just get there. Let's get there quick. There's common ground. I know it. Maybe people don't know about in my district, but I've had 40 or 50 phone calls or meetings with various school board members. Worked really hard to try and bring people together. We're very close. This will get done.
What's your response to those? And I know you've spoken out in favor of charter schools getting an equitable share of funding. And certainly there are those on the council who share your view. What's your response to those who feel that proponents of charter schools are pushing for a disproportionate share of the pie, given that this is a need-based referendum and it's intended to shore up some of the oldest and most crumbling schools in the county? If you went by per pupil funding rather than the way the school board has structured it, newer buildings would be getting a lot of funding that don't have the same level of need.
Yeah, sure. I mean, it's really hard to compare a traditional public school and a charter school. For example, most people don't know that a charter school doesn't necessarily have a cafeteria or a gym or a playground because they don't get that on the front end. You know, we have a traditional public school, gets a bunch of money, they build this big, beautiful campus as they ought to. A charter school has come along and they just don't have all that. And they have to shift a lot of their money just to pay a mortgage. And so I think the inequities, if you look at an older traditional public school and a charter school, is that, yeah, maybe the charter school is newer, but doesn't have half the stuff that a traditional public school has. And I think every kid in Jacksonville deserves to have a playground and a cafeteria and a multi-purpose room. That's where I see the disparities there.
Okay. We're getting lots of calls about this. Elizabeth is in Jacks Beach. Hi, Elizabeth. Good morning.
Hi, I'm glad we were talking about charter schools because that was my question. The funding of charter schools, isn't the whole reason that we have our charter schools is that they can be run like a business and they feel like they can do more with the amount of money given to them? So why would we take our local money that we're taxing and basically give it to the owners of charter schools that are down in South Florida? That money could stay here locally and actually fund our schools as opposed to going in the pockets of millionaires that own the charter schools in Duval County.
Thanks, Elizabeth. Yeah, I think that's driven a lot of the frustration over this, given that many of these properties are leased. You know, and the perception that this is a cash grab, at least among some voters out there, going toward for-profit concerns or through a back door, people can make money on a leased facility and putting taxpayer dollars toward that. And then often, not often, but sometimes charter schools fail. And that money has been drained out of the tax base and drained away from a public school, which might be just down the road. And so, it's a complicated issue, but what about that criticism?
No, I think that's a very fair question. So first of all, I don't support any taxpayer money going to a for-profit charter school, period. And I don't believe that we should have any capital improvements for a leased building. That doesn't make sense to me. So I think those are very fair criticisms. What drives my personal belief in school choice is not that, you know, the Beaches needs a new charter school or Mandarin, but that we have 22 failing schools in Jacksonville, second highest in the state of Florida. And those parents of those kids, of those 22 schools, have no other choices. They have to send their kid to a failing school that has been failing for a really long time. I just don't think that's fair.
They can go to another school in the district if they can get the transport their child.
If they can get there,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Often parents don't have the option to drive someone halfway across town to another school.
So I personally support the Schools of Hope initiative, which is to get charter schools and other school choice around and close to those schools that have been failing for a really long time. To me, that's the fairness of the whole school choice issue. Again, I'm not looking for money for, you know, for profits or trying to get money into people in South Florida. It's got to be local. You got to have clawbacks if things fail. I mean, there's ways to do this. We do it all the time in public service grants. We can do it here.
Are you concerned at all, though, that once this deal is done, once that money is apportioned, how do you, you know, once the horse is out of the barn, in other words, how do you do what you're saying? How do you claw back money from a charter that has failed, that those tax dollars have already been spent?
Sure. I mean, if you're talking about a large charter organization, then it should be pretty easy. I mean, I was a federal prosecutor and a lawyer in another life. You can write contracts to get your money back. You just have to know that it's there. If you're talking about a single local, you know, kind of startup, then the way the system works right now is they have to show that they're in existence for 3 years before they can get any capital money. That's what I think is going to be proposed for Duval County. So you'd have a lot of confidence going in, but, you know, we have to write our contracts intelligently. I mean, that's just using your brain.
We are talking with Rory Diamond of the City Council about a range of issues, including National Suicide Prevention Month. Let's go to some calls on that. It's 549-2937. Jimmy is downtown. Hi, Jimmy. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. I have a question about veteran suicide, actually. And I heard you all talking, good morning, Councilman Diamond. I heard y'all talking about the Federal PAWS Act. Is there anything happening in the state legislature or even locally to address the problem of veteran suicide here? Because it feels like, you know, maybe if Congress won't act, maybe we need to be working, you know, closer to home.
Oh, my
Thanks
God.
Thanks for that.
Jimmy, you are speaking my language. Absolutely. So the answer is yes. I'm working on something right now called the Fire Watch. It is a 5-county area. So Duval and the 4 surrounding counties have been working with the county commissioners out there. And we're going to launch that well before Veterans Day this year of our local effort to bring down our veteran suicide rate. We're going to throw everything we possibly can at this because we can do it. Here's the bad news. The bad news is I talked to the really smart people at the VA who are really experts on this. And they told me that no city, state, county, local area has ever lowered its veteran suicide rate. Never in the history of the country. I guarantee you, you heard it here. We are going to be the first. We're going to get this done. And then the rest of the country can emulate what we do.
Someone was waiting on hold and they hung up. It was a veteran who told our call screener he was thinking about suicide and he hung up before I could get him on the air. And I hope you're still listening, whoever you are out there. Don't isolate yourself. Call the National Suicide Prevention Hotline. It's 1-800-273-8255. Call this number now, 1-800-273-8255. Reach out. This gentleman wanted to talk to you. Apparently he wanted to say something like, I just don't think a service dog would help. I don't think it would be enough. That it's just, there's nothing that can help. And so I just want to get that message out to him. Even if you think there's nothing that can be done, reach out, make the call.
Yeah. I mean, look, I talk to literally hundreds of veterans in any given year who are struggling with the same things. And I understand that it feels like darkness and there is no hope. I guarantee you, no matter what, there is always hope for every single person, including you.
Again, that number is 1-800-273-8255. That's the National Suicide Prevention Hotline. Christopher is downtown. Hi, Christopher.
Hi.
Hey.
My question is, for him wanting to put charter schools in around town to kind of allow kids to go to these charter schools instead of the local Fung schools, wouldn't it make more sense to repurpose the monies for that charter school to go into those Fung schools to provide resources for the students and for the teachers to pull up those failing grades?
That's right. Yeah. Like the argument that we have, I mean, the overall district grade is a B, but there are failing schools and the argument that they've been underfunded and under-resourced for many years. What about that?
Yeah. So the argument we get over and over and over again for perennially failing schools is that they're just underfunded. But the evidence isn't there that it's a funding problem. It's a management problem. It is an innovation problem. And I don't think the parents of those kids should have to wait 5, 10, 15 years for the school district to figure out how to do this. For those parents in particular, that's where I think you need some school choice. And that could be any kind of school choice. That could be a charter school or to get some sort of transportation to a school in you know, traditional public school that's working, to a magnet school. I just think we need more options for those parents. It's simply not fair that not every kid in Jacksonville has an equal shot.
You're getting a lot of pushback on social media. I'm just going to read a few of the comments.
Oh, this sounds like fun.
Yeah, you're an official now, so I got to hit you with this. Here's one from Clanzanetta on Facebook. It seems like Mr. Diamond would want to support fixing struggling public schools. Many of those are schools with failing buildings. He and others should stop conflating school grades with worthiness for repair. The city council needs to get out of the way and let the people vote. Lots of other comments on our Facebook page, but that's the general tone. This perception that you and your colleagues on the city council are improperly inserting yourself into an issue that is the purview of another independently elected body. There's a lot of anger about that.
Yeah, I hear that a lot, and I get it. Look, I would rather not have this job. You know, I ran for city council. I didn't run for school board. I didn't want to have to do all this, but an opinion from our city attorney said that it was my job to look at this. And so anytime I have to press a red button or a green button to vote, I'm going to do my job and represent my constituents and learn. I'll say this, though. Checks and balances in our system happen all over the place. We'll pass a budget. The mayor has to sign it. We do the sheriff's budget. We pass all that. Every single constitutional officer has to come through the mayor's budget review. I mean, it's not unusual for people of different elected bodies to be looking over each other's shoulders. It's actually a healthy part of democracy. Now, I'm not loving this, and we need to get this done sooner than later, but this is not necessarily a bad process. I think we have a much better plan today than we did 4 months ago.
What about the criticism of that Office of General Counsel opinion, that it really wasn't an independent opinion? Critics perceive that that gentleman is issuing an opinion that's in accordance with the mayor's wishes, and that you and some of the other allies of the mayor on the city council are also voting in accordance with what the mayor would like to see happen. What about that?
I reject that completely and in total. I mean, I have to wake up in the morning and look at myself in the mirror. I have to go to bed at night and sleep. I do that because I feel like I'm doing the right thing every day for the right reasons. We run Canines for Warriors with one rule: do the right way every time, every day, for the right reasons. And I'm doing the exact same thing on city council. I know Jason Gabriel very well. I think he's an honorable and decent person who's doing what he thinks is right.
Here's an email from Robert. Many take offense to the council member's claim that charter schools are the only places where innovation is happening. It sounds as if he needs to be educated about the many innovative programs in the Duval County Public Schools.
Yeah, no. So I find this fascinating. People keep saying that the only place I see innovation happening is in charter schools, and that's not true. There's innovation all over our county. I have, as a member of the Jacksonville Journey, probably visited 2 or 3 dozen Duval County schools. But another place where you're seeing a lot of innovation and where you're seeing a movement because of the competition it brings is charter schools riding alongside public schools. It improves them both.
What's an example that you perceive to be a good example of that?
Well, Wayman Academy, right here, you know, working across the street from some very troubled neighborhoods, is doing great work. If you go there, you see kids are doing much better than their peers in the local traditional public schools.
And you served on the Jacksonville Journey. I did too. I was on a subcommittee of that. And when we talk about education, in struggling neighborhoods, the socioeconomic determinants, are really, more than anything the teachers are doing often, the driver of so much of this. What would you say to the calls that we've heard on this program from listeners that going away from the issue of school funding, that the city needs a dedicated funding source for kids? Everything from reducing gun violence, we are on pace to be the murder capital of the state again this year, to strengthening families, to early childhood education, and more. A Marshall Plan, really, for kids and families and supporting struggling neighborhoods where most of these schools are located.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's the challenge, right? We have this pockets of poverty in Jacksonville, where you see the cycle of problems going around that are related to crime, education, job opportunities, homeownership, all those things in this cycle. And I absolutely think we need to do as much as humanly possible to heal that bridge. You see the Kids Hope Alliance doing really great work. I would love to see a dedicated funding stream for the Kids Hope Alliance. I'm not saying necessarily a new tax, but guarantee that year over year, that those programs, more than any other in the entire city, get funding. I really believe in the programs that Kids Hope Alliance is looking after. It's super important. And frankly, if you look at the history of our city, that's our biggest challenge, is to make sure that every kid is getting at least the fairest chance that we can provide. And right now, I don't think we're doing it, but we could get there.
Here's an email from Abby. Please add that charters choose where to go, not where they are needed. They also do not typically offer transportation. Public school buildings belong to the public for emergency shelters, adult education, playgrounds, summer school activities. They remain our assets. Charters are for profit. Ask the councilman if he is getting donations from these groups. That's been another bone of contention that charter school proponents, donors who've funded city council campaigns are putting their thumb on the scale on this matter. Have you received funding from charter school supporters, and is that driving your position?
Oh, I haven't accepted any money from any charter groups, like in Florida campaign.
But individuals
finance.
Who support.
Yeah, I'm sure there's probably at least half a dozen. And then if you look at my campaign finance reports, I've received lots of money from people who only want public, you know, traditional public schools to get money and don't like charters at all. There's not a single donation I've ever taken that's changed my mind about anything. You know, I've studied public education policy for the last 15 years. I think it's super interesting. But what I don't want to do is just sit pat and do nothing when we see 22 failing schools in Jacksonville. We need to do something. Charter schools is one possible solution. We need to be pushing this thing as a community.
At the same time, the graduation rate is up. The overall district grade is a B. Is it really as bad as critics have made out?
So the 22 failing schools are as bad as the critics are making it out. That's the issue. There's a bunch of really great schools. In fact, if you go around my district, you go to the beaches, every school is incredible. That's what's so frustrating is it's, you know, these 22 are kind of located around the same areas and they're the ones that need the most help. I think you look, we've got kind of like a dumbbell going on. On one side, you've got a bunch of really great schools picking up our grade, and we've got 22 failing schools that are pulling it down. So let's focus on those 22.
How would then changing the funding formula for charters do that, given that it would open the door toward more charters opening up in more middle class, thriving areas of town where the schools are already doing pretty well?
Yeah, if you've ever heard me talk about this issue, I keep talking about schools of hope and making sure that schools, new charter schools, if they're opening up, are going to the neighborhoods that need it. I mean, I've said about 1,000 times, we don't need another charter school at the beaches or in Mandarin. We need them where they're needed.
Okay, let's take a few more calls. Shelley is in Middleburg. Hi, Shelley. Good morning. Calling from Clay County.
Yeah, it's Clay County, Middleburg. I think I'm probably going to be jumping on beating a dead horse here with the charter schools, but I think there's two important pieces of information that I don't hear talked about, and one is that state funding last year. All PICO funds, every single bit of the state money went to charter schools, none to the same public school. That's important. And then the other is our state legislature passed in a bill that in 2020, any money raised in counties for public schools, such as our existing public schools, like what Duval County is trying to do, must be shared on an equal level with charter schools, regardless of need. So I think that might also help shed some light on why the foot dragging in 2019 and making it go all the way to 2020. Because then nobody has to fight for the, no charter schools will have to fight for the money. It'll just be given to them.
Okay, thanks for that. Is there an agenda to drag this out till next year, given what she mentioned that's happened at the statewide level?
Yeah, if there's some big conspiracy happening to drag things out so some other result happens, well, no one is inviting me to that meeting. I simply look at what's in front of me and make the best decision I can.
Okay. And with all of that said, let's bring it back to Suicide Prevention and Awareness Month. The American Foundation for Suicide Prevention does have local Florida chapters. If you need help, you're having suicidal thoughts, go to ASP.org or call the hotline, the National Suicide Prevention Line, 1-800-273-8255. And Councilman Rory Diamond, also the CEO of Canines for Warriors. Thanks for being here.
No, I appreciate you having me.
Thanks so much. Much more still ahead later in the hour. Nick Foles is out for this season. Did you watch that Jaguars game? We'll hear from Coach Doug Marone. But up next, a brand new vision for the Garden Club of Jacksonville. Yes, the Garden Club. We'll be right back.
World Affairs Council and UNF, partnering to engage citizens in becoming better informed participants in the global community. September 17th, former ambassador to Panama, Barbara Stevenson. The Latin Americans, their love-hate relationship with the United States. Information, worldaffairscouncil.jax.org.
UF Health North on Max Leggett Parkway is the region's newest hospital and outpatient medical center, featuring all private rooms, 12 labor and delivery suites, full imaging, surgical services, and 24-hour emergency care. More at north.ufhealthjax.org.
Have you checked out WJCT's storytelling podcast, What It's Like?
We sing praises to the Khmer Rouge leader. They were always enforcing rules.
Some people are still figuring things out.
When you have PTSD, I don't know why certain battles come up and certain battles don't. Mm-hmm. I guess it's maybe the battles that really impacted you.
Others have come out on the other side.
When he started saying he was loving me more, I couldn't believe it.
Subscribe to What It's Like wherever you get your podcasts.
What can $9.90 get you? Access to the very best in science, nature, and history docs. Introducing WJCT's newest member benefit, PBS Passport Plus Curiosity Stream. Now for the first time, you can get access to all of the great documentaries on PBS's Passport and also get access to the incredible collection of Curiosity Stream, the new documentary service created by the founder of the Discovery Channel. A $9.90 monthly contribution gets you ongoing access to both Curiosity Stream and PBS's Passport service. It's a member benefit unlike any we've ever created and available only from WJZT. Sign up today to get all the documentaries you love anytime, anywhere, on any device. Passport plus Curiosity Stream together for $9.90 per month.
From doo-wop and oldies to acoustic music, listen to After Hours Monday through Friday at 9 p.m. only on 89.9 FM, your community, your world, your music.
Welcome back. Well, for the first time in its nearly 100 years of existence, the Garden Club of Jacksonville has an executive director, and she's going to execute a bold new vision for this wonderful organization. Here with more, new leader Denise Reagan. Good morning.
Good morning.
And the Garden Club president, Bobby McGinnis. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
All right, Denise, let's start with you. This is exciting. Now, anyone who's driven down Riverside Avenue has driven past the Garden Club building. It's been in the city since 1922 when Nina Kummer of the Kummer Museum founded it, but never had a paid leader role before. You're the first, is that right?
That's right. The Garden Club story is one of sisters doing it for themselves. You know, they've been leading that as volunteers for a long time. And they came to kind of a crossroads a couple of years ago and said, you know, we really need to think through what the next 100 years of the Garden Club will look like. And luckily, that meant hiring me.
So, okay. So, Bobby, what is the purpose for Denise's new role and how do you see this expanding what you do?
Well, we spent a lot of time last year putting together a strategic plan. And we are following it to the letter. I know a lot of groups do that and don't, but we're following it. Hiring an executive director was one of our missions, along with an operations manager. Denise has brought on Damian Robinson, which is awesome. Things are happening pretty quickly.
Yeah, Damian Lamar, he hosts our Taste Test radio show. He'll be also working with you at the Garden Club. Now, this is such an interesting piece of Jacksonville history. As I mentioned, Nina Kummer founded the Garden Club in 1922. They raised money to buy that piece on the river. You've got the physical building there, which is absolutely beautiful. There's a ballroom. There's a courtyard. But it's more than the physical building. Can you talk a little bit more about what you're going to be initiating to expand the reach of this organization?
Right. Well, there's really two parts of the Garden Club as an entity. There's the club itself, and the club has been more inward-facing over the last several years, but really we want to change that and be looking outward, reaching new audiences, and finding people who think like us, who care deeply about the environment, care about all areas of gardening. And, we think that that stretches across all different ages and demographics.
Yeah. And, it's interesting. This is interesting timing, Bobby, because in this age that we're living in now, where sustainability is becoming so important, concerns about climate change, sea level rise, the impact of flooding, including right there where the garden club is, these have become pressing concerns for this community and for this state. And so how do you see the garden club weighing in and adding its voice to making this a more sustainable community?
Well, that has always been part of our mission, to work with like-minded organizations and to make sure that as we move forward with the new plan, we'll be bringing in additional memberships other than just the circles that we've had over the years. Mm-hmm. So we hope to appeal to a broader base of the community and work with all the other organizations. We have some great relationships with those organizations now.
Sure. And such an incredible legacy in the community. And not to stereotype, but I'm going to guess that you want to bring in younger members. We tend to think of the Garden Club as women and maybe women over 40. I'm stereotyping, but you want to create a really diverse, vibrant, multi-generational support base for this, right?
Oh, definitely. And across genders, definitely. Across ages, definitely. I mean, young and old, people care about the natural world around them. So whether they are actually getting their hands in the dirt and planting things, or they just care about, good tree planting, trees, around the city, whether they care about community gardens and food deserts and, access to fresh fruits and vegetables, whether they care about the St. John's River and, what it takes to, adapt to the environment that we find ourselves in. These are all things that we think a lot of people can really relate to.
Are you going to be giving people new opportunities to sort of get their hands dirty, actually do some gardening?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have all sorts of programs. We have things where we teach you about every kind of gardening that you can imagine and how to deal with pests and how to deal with birds and how to recognize birds. We have fun flower arranging things. We have a program called Fun with Flowers. There's about 7 or 8 of those throughout the year that are really fun, and they're a make and take program. So you get to take home the thing that you create at the end of the session. We have Budding Gardeners, which is a program for young people. They're very young, elementary age children. So that they can learn how to garden and take it through to their, adulthood.
Very cool. And so if this is all intriguing to you, Bobby, you want to get the word out that people can become a member of the Garden Club for $30. Is that right?
$30. Membership levels start at $30. And we will be creating many programs this year that appeal to families, to young children. I see us taking on a whole new direction this year.
It's exciting, this whole rebranding for the Garden Club of Jacksonville, and with Denise Reagan leading it. Now, with all of that said, you're going to kick this off with an open house, which is tomorrow. What's happening?
That's right. Yeah, we are so excited to open our doors to the public. This has usually been a members-only event in years past, but now we're opening our doors to everyone. And that means you at home. That means you listening on the radio right now. We want you to come. It starts at 11 a.m. tomorrow, September 10th, to 1 p.m., and there'll be a great selection of homemade food made by our governing board, who are the hosts of this event. And you'll get to meet a lot of different people in the neighborhood, because there's going to be people from all over the city. We've had about 300 people who have RSVP'd for this event.
But still room for more.
Of course.
That's a big
ballroom.
Absolutely.
What would surprise people the most about the Garden Club of Jacksonville? What's the little known fact?
I think that when people come in the building, so many people are surprised if they've never been there before at just how beautiful the space is. Mm-hmm. And looking out on the river and our patio with the fountain outside, it's a really special location.
It's a beautiful space for events. I remember, as a matter of fact, when the Super Bowl was in Jacksonville and there was a Super Bowl event at the Garden Club. It was like worlds were colliding. It was the greatest thing I've ever seen. I'll never forget that. Were you at that?
I was not, but I've heard great tales about it.
What do you remember from that night, Bobby?
Just that it was such a spectacular, and they reinvented the place. You know, it was totally, totally different.
I'm trying to remember who was there that night, like who the main stars were. And it's escaping my memory. I'm sure someone will email me, but.
Was it a magazine party, Maxim?
That's what it was. It was Maxim.
Yes.
At the Garden Club. Mm-hmm. That to me was the epitome of the Super Bowl weekend in Jacksonville, because you had Maxim coming in at this very traditional space, and as you said, completely changing it around. But now is what I'm hearing from both of you today is that you're reinventing the Garden Club for a new era, a new decade, a new generation of gardeners and contributors. And that's how organizations keep lasting. They occasionally reinvent themselves.
And that will not be strange occurrence that you remember it to be, you know, when you went last time.
Yeah, yeah.
It will, you know, there is a new energy and I tell you what, the governing board and the executive committee are responsible for making this happen. Their strength, their vision is what is driving this. So, you know, don't count out some, women who, you know, you may think be of a certain age.
That's right.
They still have great ideas.
Oh, yes. And it's the women of this city that serve on these boards and these organizations, Bobby, that make this city what it is, that make it so vibrant, particularly in the nonprofit world.
And we have a lot of those women on this board. And it's interesting because if you go back in time, and we want to continue to tie our history to our future, that was Nina Comer's mission, to engage the ladies of the community, to plant trees, to make the gardens. And it worked all these years.
And now with Denise, it's a brand new lush era for the Garden Club. You couldn't pick a better person. So
thank you.
Kudos, Denise Reagan, the new executive director, and Bobby McGinnis, the president of the Garden Club of Jacksonville. Again, come on out to their open house tomorrow during your lunch hour at the Garden Club there on Riverside Avenue. If you've never been in that building, you've driven by it and never gone in, tomorrow's your chance. So congrats, everybody.
Thank you.
In a moment, a look at the First Coast Heart Walk coming up this month. Also, Nick Foles is already out as Jags quarterback as the team falls to Kansas City in the season opener. We'll hear from Coach Doug Marrone right after this.
World War II significantly affected Florida in a variety of ways. I'm Ben Brookmarkle, and coming up on Florida Frontiers, the weekly radio magazine of the Florida Historical Society, we'll visit the World War II exhibit at the Museum of Florida History in Tallahassee. We'll discuss early soil survey maps and the impact of sea level rise in St. Augustine. That's Florida Frontiers, Monday evening at 6:30 on 89.9 WJCT.
In Indiana, mental health needs were skyrocketing at the same time there was a chronic shortage of providers. One Indiana medical center, though, has found a workaround.
Good morning, doctor.
How are you doing today?
Telepsychiatry.
In my opinion, that's life-saving.
I'm Mary Louise Kelly. That story this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today at 4 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
On the next Fresh Air, the CIA's secret experiments with LSD in the 50s and 60s in search of a drug that could be used to control the minds of enemies. Allen Ginsberg and Ken Kesey were introduced to LSD through the program, but other unwitting subjects in prisons and detention centers were subjected to psychological torture. We talk with journalist Stephen Kenzer, author of Poisoner in Chief. Join us.
Today at noon on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
Is a college education still worth it? A growing number of critics call it a rigged system for the rich, but in many professions, a degree is still vital to getting hired or getting paid well. How can we fix the broken promises of higher education? Next time on 1A.
Today at 10 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, quarterback Nick Foles' debut game for the Jaguars didn't last beyond the first quarter Sunday at the season opener against the Kansas City Chiefs at TIAA Bank Field. Foles suffered a broken left collarbone after getting hit by Chiefs defensive tackle Chris Jones, and the Jags went on to lose to Kansas 40-26. Not a good start for the team. Here's head coach Doug Marrone.
You know, I think we're gonna keep getting better. We're gonna believe in each other. And like I told the players, I can't speak for anyone. I can't speak for any of them. I can't speak for the coaches. But I made them a promise. I said, the one thing you'll see is I will lead this team to the best of my ability. All right? I'll do the best job possible. Okay? And I believe in this football team. And I think that we will win games. But we make no mistake, we do have work ahead of us. But I feel good about where this team is.
Meanwhile, Foles says he's undergoing surgery today. No timetable yet on his return. And finally, this hour, the American Heart Association's First Coast Heart Walk is coming up this month, the largest walk in the city. It helps raise funds for innovative medical breakthroughs. Here with a preview, Tom Van Berkel. He's CEO of the Main Street America Group and chair of the 2019 First Coast Heart Walk. Also with us, Dr. El Sabag, cardiologist at Mayo Clinic. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
And this is coming up Saturday, September 21st, bright and early at Metropolitan Park. Tom, you're hoping for even more people to walk this year and also support the Healthy for Good initiative from the American Heart Association. Can you tell us about that?
Yes, we are very excited about the walk. It's at 8 o'clock, starting at 8 o'clock on September 21st. And we're teaming with the American Heart Association to promote healthy lifestyles, trying to raise money for research and education, and trying to do everything we can to bring awareness to heart disease and stroke, which is the number one and number five killers of all Americans.
Yeah, that's right. The number one killer in this country, Dr. Sabag. Thousands die each day from heart disease. Stroke, as Tom said as well, the leading cause of severe disability, too. Can you tell us, though, what kind of advancements that have been made over the years when it comes to cardiovascular care and stroke care, particularly what you're working on at Mayo?
Definitely. No. So, you know, each day we lose about 2,150 Americans from heart disease, which, as was said, it was number one. It is the number one killer. Stroke is also number five killer. So since the inception of the Heart Walk, the mortality rates from cardiovascular disease and stroke have plummeted by 45%. And that's because of funds raised through the Heart Walk that go towards groundbreaking research and education. Basically, programs such as the Wellness RX, which work towards improving the health of the community through blood pressure programs, food access, and educating, managing cholesterol and blood sugars. So a lot of education and awareness, because honestly, 80% of all heart disease and stroke is preventable.
That's right. That can't be said enough. With the right diet and lifestyle choices, you can prevent this. Let's talk about the important points everyone needs to know. Managing blood pressure, you said, and then the other things. Can you
Absolutely.
Go through those?
Yes. So there are the AHA seven simple steps to a healthier lifestyle. Basically, managing blood pressure, controlling cholesterol, reducing the blood sugar, getting active, eating better, losing weight, and quitting smoking. And our community work with the American Heart Association is working to make these lifestyle changes known and more accessible for all Jacksonville residents.
Yeah, quit smoking, get out and exercise, try to eat less sugar, saturated fat. All of these things make such a difference. And Tom, you have an aggressive fundraising goal this year for the Heart Walk. You're hoping for, I think it's 25,000 people to come out. That's a huge amount of people.
Yes, we expect 25,000 or more, and we have a goal of 1.75 million that we want to raise.
And where will the money go?
To research, education, yes.
Yeah, yep. So this is the largest walk of its kind in the city of Jacksonville. So, and it's not too late for people to... They can register right on site that Saturday morning, correct?
Yes, they can. Or they can go to
firstcoastheartwalk.org. It's the First Coast Heart Walk, and it's coming up later this month in Jacksonville. The date is Saturday, September 21st, bright and early at downtown Metropolitan Park. So register now, get out and exercise, enjoy a beautiful day of walking, get heart healthy, support the American Heart Association. And thank you, gentlemen, for your support. Tom Van Berkel, CEO of the Main Street America Group and chair of the Heart Walk. Dr. Elsa Bogg is cardiologist at Mayo Clinic. And thanks, by the way, I'm going to plug my little cup that you guys gave me 3 or 4 years ago. It's an American Heart Association coffee mug that I keep in the studio all the time. And it has all these little tips on it, like reduce stress, drink more water, get exercise, eat well, all the things we need to be reminded of every day. So thanks for all you do to keep us healthy, and thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
All right, that's our show. Thanks for listening. Our producer is Heather Schatz. Michelle Corum is our director. And if you have feedback, comments, we always want to hear them. Send your emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. I'm Melissa Ross. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. If you're listening to our rebroadcast tonight, keep listening for some music and enjoy that. We'll see you tomorrow morning.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.